Welcome to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from the legendary hills of Brown.
Where the plum purple haze,
the one nature herself drapes over the hills and hollers,
inspires local characters, artists, and nature lovers.
It's as though the hills themselves conspire to create a beauty and a culture in the heart of Indiana.
Sit for a spell and hear the music.
The tall tales.
True stories.
And current goings on.
Brought to you by folks who still know how to sit by a fire in winter.
And swim buck naked in summer.
Welcome to episode 24 of the Brown County Hour. This is Dave Seastrom and
Vera Grubbs
with another fine show. We have something special for you today. We invited the Whipstitch Sallies to our studio, and we have a live recording of some of their great music and a fun interview with them.
We also have an interview with Rich Reardon discussing his documentary film on the Irish singer-songwriter Eunan McIntyre, who will be performing at the Playhouse here in Nashville on March 23rd.
We listen in to the League of Women Voters Third House meeting with our two local representatives, Brent Steele and Eric Cook, concerning the forest land situation.
There's another essay from Dave Seastrom, a poem from one of our favorites, Gunter Flum, and a Brown County News update from Rick Fettig. And if that isn't enough, we have a group of actors from the Artist Colony Inn who are performing a murder mystery.
In our first segment, Rick Fettig brings us a Brown County News update, and we bring you the Whipstitch Sallies in a live recording from our studio at the History Center here in Nashville.
This is Rick Fettig with a Brown County News update. There was a couple people that died, a lost dog got found, several EMT runs, but everybody's okay, and quota time, so a number of people got pulled over, and only 60% actually got tickets, and only 5 went to jail. No one got robbed, only one fist fight between a couple of thugs, and oh yes, about 10 slide-offs and 2 families got rescued for furnace breakdowns and water pipe freezes. Due to the corn shortage, the price of white lightning has gone up a bit, and there was one brush fire, and you should have seen the mushroom cloud when it got to the outhouse.
And now, here's the Whipstitch Sallies.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Last night I was only, but I should have stayed in. How the hell did I get myself back here again?
This is Rick Fettig with the Brown County Hour.
And this is Dave Seastrom welcoming the Whipstitch Sallies to our studio. Hi, gals.
Hello. Hi.
How's it going?
Thank you so much for showing up on such a cold and wintry night. Goodness, you guys have been so busy. You have 3 CDs and your new one is called Hand 'Em Over. When did that come out?
That came out last July, so July 2013, and we put that together, well, because we'd run out of the other one, which was Live at the Pixie, and it's good to have an album for sale, and we were getting ready to go on tour down south, too, and thought it would be really nice to take a new product on tour with us.
Well, the group started in 2010, is that correct?
Yep.
So, Sam, why don't you tell us the story of how the Sallies got started?
Yeah, well, Allie and I actually met while we were working at a summer camp up in northern Indiana. We started seeing this band of another friend of ours from camp called the Goldmine Pickers, and they were playing this kind of bluegrass, newgrass music, and they were our peers, people our age, and like it kind of blew our minds. We didn't really know what this whole genre was, and probably in about fall of 2009, Allie bought a mandolin, and I had my guitar, and we would like try to tackle these songs together, and then, you know, just really exploring the genre. All of a sudden, Allie comes up and she's like, "Well, my friend wants to know if we want to do some music for an event." But I'm like, "Yeah, you know, we could do what we've been working on, I guess. Man, we're gonna have to work a lot harder if we're gonna do this in front of people." And so Allie kind of piped in and said, "Well, I've got this friend Kat from college. You know, maybe she can come, you know, play some something too. And so we put together, I think that first set was something incredibly long, like 2 hours.
It was a 3 hour set.
It was a 3 hour set. Yeah. And to me, that blows my mind today, because I, even now, a 3 hour set's a long time. So we managed to kind of ragtag put something together for this first show that we had. And I guess Kat and Allie decided that if we were going to play this show together in January 2010, that we needed a name.
Well, that's interesting, actually. So Allie and I met in college, and we met in a poetry class together, actually.
Well, this is Kat.
This is Kat. Hi, this is Kat. So Allie and I met in a poetry class, and we both just discovered that we had the same kind of goofy personality and really enjoyed like the way that words sounded and how to put them together. When we found out that we were going to do this benefit show, we decided, oh gosh, we should probably have a name. Ha ha, this is just going to be like a one-time thing. Well, what sounds really fun? Oh, I like the word whip stitch. What the heck is a whip stitch? Well, that's this crafting term, and it goes around the edge of a blanket. Okay, well, yeah, sure. Why not? And we're all girls. Can we use that somehow? Okay, sure. Well, sometimes when I think about like 1920s gangster movies, I think like, hey there, Sally. Like, refer into a woman, so yeah, right. Whip stitch Sally.
Sally Forth.
Yeah. Exactly. Well,
right. Do any of you sew?
No. We do some light crafting.
Light crafting.
What were your backgrounds? You said you came from different musical backgrounds.
Yeah, well, this is Sam here. I came from all throughout high school and after high school playing electric bass and electric guitar in like hardcore punk rock bands.
What about you, Allie?
Well, as a kid, I grew up listening to We Sing Fun and Folk, you know, good old folk songs in the car. And gosh, I learned a lot of church music and things like that. So,
well, Katie, you haven't said much, but you had a pretty exciting opportunity when you placed third, is it, at the contest for Garrison Keillor? You want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. It was a great time. It was I guess it was October 2012. My friend and I learned this song called Sister Kate. It was a song that we did a duet on. It was actually the first song that I had ever duetted with my friend Julia. We're in a group called the Half Step Sisters.
Yeah, Julia Conway, is that correct?
Yes. We submitted this song because a friend encouraged us to submit it to the duet competition. And then one day I got a voicemail from the office of Prairie Home Companion, and we were completely shocked. And they flew out all the contestants, the six duets that they chose, and put us up in a hotel and treated us like royalty. Everybody was very nice. There was a party at Garrison's house after the show. It was great, something to remember for the rest of my life.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where was this exactly? Is this in Lake Wobegon or?
St. Paul, where St. they Paul. Do okay. the, yeah, the yeah. home recordings.
You guys have really caught fire. People talk about you. Yeah. It's exciting. You're getting a lot of gigs. You want to talk about some of the places you're going to be playing soon?
We're picking up a weekend in Lafayette, Indiana, the Lafayette Brewing Company. We'll be playing with a couple really awesome bands, the Woodstove Flapjacks and the Tillers. And then we're heading out in early April and kind of doing like a Southern Great Lakes tour. So we'll be in Fort Wayne and Kalamazoo. And we're picking up a few dates in Chicago, and then we're heading back home. So that'll be like a 5-day loop, I think.
Might be a good time to throw in a contact.
You can totally check us out on Facebook. That's where we remind everyone about our shows, and we put that all up on the website too, which is thewhipstitchsallys.com.
Saw a couple of your YouTube videos. One was at our local Muddy Boots, and one was at the John Hartford Festival. So,
well, I got to hearing about John Hartford through our friend who was actually in the Gold Mine Pickers that we talked about earlier, and he was telling me about John's music. At first listen, it's sort of like, whoa, this guy's all over the place, really eclectic dude. I kind of liked that, you know. It was a great thing to be able to be invited to the John Hartford Memorial Festival and play there a couple years ago, and quite an honor too to get to learn a couple of John's tunes and kind of bring a new arrangement of those to the festival.
I've been a big fan of his for years, since Aeroplane.
Yeah. That album is awesome.
That's a classic.
Well, it sounds like you guys have a lot of fun with what you're doing.
We hang out outside of playing music too, so that people see us and they're like, oh, you guys but you're not playing and you're still together. What do you do?
All it's like friends or something. Yeah. Just hang out.
You guys are never apart.
Yeah. When I talk to other people that are in bands, you know, they talk about, yeah, I haven't seen this person. We just get together at practice. I'm like, oh, if it's like a Friday or Saturday and we don't have a gig, we're like, what are you guys doing? You wanna hang out or
order pizza?
Yeah.
Well, I got a question. How do you guys travel around? I didn't see you pull up, so I don't know what you arrived in tonight.
Transportation has changed a little, but a lot of our travels have been in my Jeep.
Or in my Jeep.
Or now in Sam's Jeep. I'll never forget when we played at this big theater in Indy the Vogue.
I didn't have my Jeep yet.
Yeah.
You just had your Jeep.
Yeah. So we had, I think, all four of us in the Jeep, plus all of our instruments and whatever
cozy
gear we needed. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We were cozy.
Including the stand-up bass.
Including the stand-up bass, right, right.
In a Jeep Liberty.
We're jammed in there. And I roll up into the parking lot and roll down the window and say hello to the attendant. We say, oh, we're one of the bands. We were just wondering where to park. And he says, oh, you're the headlining act? Like, yeah, here we are, and he's like, where's your tour bus? this is the tour bus,
you
sir.
At
this is my little red Jeep Liberty tour bus. Maybe we'll upgrade down the road here. That's definitely one of the plans.
Yep, it's one of our summer goals.
So what's next on the agenda? You've just finished this new CD. Are you working on some new tunes?
Yeah, we have several half-finished or three-quarters way finished songs. We're trying to get a complete album together. The EP is Hand 'Em Over. That has four originals, but we'd like to have a fuller album of all originals.
Well, we're really excited this evening because you're going to perform live for our show, and this almost never happens for us.
Oh,
so
right.
I just want you to know how much we appreciate that.
Yeah, well, we figure we're all here, so might as well play it live.
All right. Tell me about Got Me a Letter.
Well, that song came about. I was raised by a very strong, strong kind of mom. She was very pro-woman. She was a hod carrier when I was growing up. If you know anything about hod carriers, she's pretty tiny too, so she's a tough one and she can hack it. So she always said, you can do anything that a man can. And so, you know, at Top 40 Country Radio, you hear all these songs about like girls and women pining away for men who are cheating on them. And that drives me nuts. I couldn't stand to sing a song about that. I just knew that I couldn't
stand
for it.
Right to hell with those men.
I didn't want to sing a song like that. You know, everybody always, we're a girl group, and everyone always said, oh, you should do the song Jolene, and that's a great song, but I just knew I couldn't sit with myself if I sang that song, because I didn't want to be, you know, pining away, worrying about some guy who was out cheating on me. So we kind of flipped it around, and we were like, all right, well, you know, what else would this look like? What's it like? You know, who's Jolene? You know, what is it like getting this letter? Oh, yeah, we referenced the song a little bit, so you'll have to listen close for the lyrics. And that's the one we just shot a video for, too. All around Nashville and out in that nice field there at sunset out on Helmsburg Road. So
there you go.
Yep.
Well, I got me a letter from a girl I know. Been sleeping with a man and she can't let Jolene, and I've got a story to tell. I tell you right now that it don't end well. I got me a letter. Well, I got me a letter. So I wrote her a letter, and here's how it goes. Doing you wrong ain't done me well. Take your man, I tell you right now, he ain't worth a damn. He's cool, he's cute, he says that he'll be true. But what you don't know is he cheats on me too. I get me a letter. Well, I get me a letter. Do it. just boys. Play with your heart if you give them a choice. I play it right back. My heart's made of steel. Don't wish you were me, cause I got a bad deal. I can't be a little.
We pause for station identification.
Feel nurtured and encouraged as you begin or continue your yoga practice. Riverlight Yoga is Nashville, Indiana's only dedicated yoga space committed to your personal growth and healthy yoga practice. See riverlightyoga.com for full details.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio WFHB at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org.
Welcome back to episode 24 of the Brown County Hour. In our next segment, we have Woodwatch Update, and we'll be listening to a portion of the League of Women Voters Third House meeting concerning our forest lands. You can listen to the full report on our website, www.browncountyhour.com/woodwatch.
Vera Grubb shares an interview with local artist Mary Pendergrass. We have a murder mystery from the Artist Colony Inn and more music from the Whipstitch Sallies. This is Dave Seastrom with the Brown County Hour. On February 8th, a Meet Your Legislators meeting was held in Nashville, Indiana. I addressed many people's concern regarding the DNR's destructive forest management plan. This is how our legislators responded. First up is Representative Eric Cook, followed by Senator Brent Steele.
That certainly is the spirit of House Resolution 16, because those bills didn't advance, they didn't get a hearing. So neither the DNR nor the advocates had the chance to go in and explain their position to legislators. And so by asking for a summer study committee, that'll be a forum where all of this can be raised. And don't get discouraged. You know, I mentioned the wineries. It took them 3 years to change the law to be able to sell to the grocer next door to the winery. So the process is sometimes frustrating, it's sometimes slow, it's sometimes described as gridlock. But I felt very strongly that I needed to hear, even though I don't serve on the committee where that bill was assigned, as a legislator, I felt I needed to hear more from both sides. I needed to hear DNR's reason. I thought the advocates needed the chance to explain what they wanted to do. So hopefully this resolution is adopted, and this summer there'll be a summer study committee on this issue.
Is there any chance those bills will be re-proposed next legislative session?
Well, you know, one good thing about summer study committees is it makes it more likely that a bill could be proposed, because the vetting is done over the summer, where we have more time and more opportunity for stakeholder input and more deliberation. And so the advantage of having an issue in a summer study committee is, yeah, you bring it forward in the summer, you kind of flush out people's concerns, maybe you find out after talking you're not as far apart as you thought you were, and then it makes it more likely that a bill would have a chance of going forward next year when we reconvene.
The Indiana legislature honors the committee process. And it doesn't mean that a bill that hasn't gone through a summer study committee can't be filed or heard or make it through, because I've filed several bills in my lifetime that I just thought up on my own and never was vetted by a summer study committee. Sometimes they make it through and sometimes they don't. As a chairman, I'm telling you this is true, that this is a thing that I struggle with. I'll have assigned to my committee in any given year 100 or so bills, maybe more. And I've got to somehow determine which ones of those I will grant a hearing. We've just finished our halfway point. I had three committee meetings. I was hearing 8 to 9 bills a day. Several of those bills, when you're looking at them, they came out. This bill was recommended by the Indiana Commission on Courts. This bill was recommended by the Sentencing Policy Study Committee. And those are the ones you got to say, well, that has to have a few brownie points on its side already to get to the hearing table, as opposed to something that's never been vetted. Just because it didn't make it through this year, like I said, don't be discouraged, because things pick up steam. But I would encourage absolutely every one of you to write a letter to, for example, Carlin Yoder. He's chairman of the Natural Resources and Ag Committee that I sit on. Writing. I don't know how Eric does, but when I get a letter that's written by hand, that's not a form letter, I'm going to read that one for sure. Trust me, if you all write your heartfelt letters to Carlin Yoder, just send it to him, chairman of the Ag Committee or Natural Resources Committee, State House, 200 West Washington Street, Indianapolis 46204. It'll get there, and let him know. Squeaks do get grease, and be squeaky.
This has been Dave Seastrom with the Brown County Hour.
This is Vera Grubbs. I have with me Mary Pendergrass. I see your name very often in our local publications. You're involved in several different organizations. Would you talk about your interests, talents, and skills?
I was attracted to the area here because I knew the artists. My grandparents were part of the same group of artists that went to Munich when my father was a year old and came back. They were painters and printmakers. And when we moved back to the Midwest after having been away for 35 years, we were looking around for a place to retire. We bought the house of one of the old artists. I walked in the door and I just felt like I knew the house and the artist and the art. So that was what drew us here. But I have a kind of an eclectic background, both educationally and interest-wise. In 1970, as an adult, I started learning how to weave at the De Young Museum in San Francisco. It was my first formal weaving class. And then I had almost 3.5 years of formal art training. I actually finished my undergraduate degree in history. I already had the 3 years of registered nursing education. And so everywhere I've lived in this country, California, Colorado, Seattle, and New England, I've studied the traditional and contemporary fiber art forms that were influenced. And that includes basketry. I love basketry. I teach it, but I also do all kinds of weaving and fiber art, from making paper and silk paper to painting on the silk paper. So I just, anything to do with fiber has just had a resonance with me. And so the parallel has been art and nursing. I've studied weave forms of all kinds. I've woven on looms of all kinds. I've taught everything I know in both weaving and spinning and dyeing and basketry and paper making to adults and children over the years. And I'm not sure why I'm attracted to it. I mean, when you think about why somebody loves to do something, why someone has a passion for something, it's not always easy to see where it came from.
No, it isn't.
There's no one in my family that gets me, you know? I mean, nobody in my family does anything like. So I'm not sure the origins of it. I know as a kid I used to love to play with fiber. We had a spinning wheel in my third grade class in the suburbs of Chicago that was a functional wheel. And I know that planted a seed. And that's why I try very hard when I work with children in the classroom to let them experience spinning and carding and weaving, not just watch it on YouTube or watch somebody demonstrating it, but actually get the feel for what it's like to do it. And it brought the art and the history together. And that's another theme in me, and that's, I've always thought of what I did in nursing as well as art as applied anthropology. I don't just teach the technique, I teach what it was about mankind's development that decided one day that they were going to try something. You know, there's an evolutionary yes. process in the development of the brain that had to do with the creative process, and part of it was every time somebody learned to do something and taught it to someone else, it encouraged development of certain parts of the brain.
Right.
Process. And a lot of art and traditional art is about process. Music is about process. Whenever I love something, I want to share it. And that is what I call the legacy. The legacy is in teaching what I know to adults and children, because I love it. It's wonderful, and I want them to enjoy it too. So that's why every time I've learned something, I've passed it on.
This has been Vera Grubbs with the Brown County Hour for WFHB.
Yeah, this is Rick Fettig with the Brown County Hour, and I'm here with Bibiana Stutzman, and she's with the Artist Colony Inn here in Nashville, and they have a dinner theater, which is a murder mystery. You want to tell us some more about that?
Sure. We offer a murder mystery once a month starting February 15th. That's our opening show this year. And we have three shows in October. The title for this year's show is Talent for Murder. And it's based in a retirement home setting. If you're interested in tickets or would like to have a little bit more information about the show, the menu, that type of thing, you can contact the Artist Colony Inn at 812-988-0600, or you can go on our website at artistcolonyinn.com. We will be holding the murder mysteries on February 15th, March 22nd, April 19th, May 17th, June 21st, July 19th, August 16th, September 13th, October 11th, 18th, and 25th.
And now, the Mystery Theater.
Good evening, residents of Shady Hills Retirement Center. Tonight is our talent show to raise money to save Shady Hills from extinction. I, Nurse Flatchett, will be the coordinator for the talent this evening and responsible for the counting of the money, which I'm sure will flood in as we get on with the festivities.
I'm ready for the show. How do I look?
Not in uniform as usual, Nurse Hattie.
You look great to me, Nurse Hottie.
Oh, Doc Rock, you know my name is Nurse Hattie.
Just let me use my imagination, okay?
Could you wear anything tighter or more inappropriate?
Oh, dear.
Why, if it isn't the famous vaudeville team, Denny Hart and Henny Moss. Denny, are you and Henny ready for the entertainment? You know your act is all we've got, and we're counting on your talent to make this fundraiser a huge success.
Oh, dear. I hope so. Henny?
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars.
Hey, Moss and Hart here. Yes, sir. My old pal Denny and I have sung and played at some of the greatest lounges, bowling alleys, and events this side of... where? Milwaukee. Right, Denny?
It's going to be a great show.
Yes, we want everybody to give, give, give until it hurts.
I'm here. Come on, people. Let's get the ball rolling. Let's get this party started. Hey, where is everybody?
We're standing right in front of you, Muriel.
I'd like to give her something.
Can someone keep her occupied during the festivities? She's drunk again, and just because she owns this place, we have to put up with her.
I have too much to do to worry about it. Somebody ought to just get rid of her.
Don't look at me. She may have been young and pretty once upon a time, but now she just looks like 10 miles of bad road. Besides, she doesn't like me. She's just jealous of my looks.
Yeah, and that old biddy is trying to cut our entertainment budget here at the home. What is life without music? A song in your heart, and start spreading the news.
Come on, everyone. Let's get out there, tend to the residents, and get this show on the road. We have to make tonight a success, or Shady Hills will cease to be, and I will never let that happen.
Oh, Denny, honey, could you stop playing that piano long enough to pour me another drink?
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear is right, and things are terribly wrong at Shady Hills. Will the residents be able to save the home? Nurse Flatchett is determined not to let anything get in the way of the success of the talent show and her happiness with someone you'll never suspect. Will the piano player pour Muriel Westenbrook that drink? Will she find her way home? Will she even get home? Will Nurse Hottie live up to her name? Will the crotchety old song and dance team, Henny and Denny, deliver their finest act? Watch out. Watch out to anyone who gets in their way. Will Doc Rock let Nurse Flatchett run the show? Will he inherit the home? Are the others jealous? Is he consumed by it? Is he upset the old lady didn't offer him a drink? There is intrigue and infighting, and when it couldn't get any worse...
Somebody has a talent for murder. Come join us for the fun, the intrigue, and help solve the murder as Golden Ticket Productions presents the grand opening of A Talent for Murder. Check the Artist Colony Inn website for times and dates throughout the year.
Oh, dear.
Be there.
Well, thanks for coming down, and we appreciate what you're doing for the community.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate you having me on the show.
And now, here's the Whip Stitch Sallies.
The backstory on Piney Flats. We went on tour down south this summer in July, as I said, and our first stop was in Piney Flats, Tennessee, where we stayed with our host, whose house was, I think, what, ladies, like 1780s or something?
Really old.
It was a really old house he had just moved into. What?
It's right next to Rocky Top.
Oh, probably. Yeah, the flats in the top, yeah. So it was such an interesting place and so different from my house and other houses I'm in around here that I felt compelled to write down just some descriptions of things I saw around the house. Things like wooden floor and hot cakes in the cast iron pan. That really happened. And so I just wrote things down. Well, then I went out to Maine for a songwriting retreat where I saw you in the airport, Dave. I thought, well, I guess I better write a song since I'm at this songwriting retreat. I wonder if I can turn these things that I saw in Piney Flats into a song. Well, it started there, and over the course of several months, finally evolved into Piney Flats, the song.
Speed of light drives.
come past time. Tiny flats slow on down. Come a tangle, come past time. Come a tangle, come past time.
I don't know. That was a little more loose than the other. I hit a bum note during the third.
Now we pause for station identification.
Feel nurtured and encouraged as you begin or continue your yoga practice. River Light Yoga is Nashville, Indiana's only dedicated yoga space committed to your personal growth and healthy yoga practice. See riverlightyoga.com for full details.
You are listening to the Brown County Hour on volunteer-powered community radio WFHB at 100.7 in Brown County, 91.3 and 98.1 in Bloomington, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at wfhb.org.
Welcome back to the final segment of episode 24 of the Brown County Hour. In this segment, we have another essay from Dave Seastrom, a timely poem from Gunter Flum, an interview with Rich Reardon discussing his film documentary on Eunan McIntyre, and some more great music from the Whipstitch Sallies.
This is Dave Seastrom with the Brown County Hour. We have finally crossed over into March. This has been a winter to remember here in Brown County. I bet you're feeling the same way where you live. While it's true that winter isn't exactly behind us yet, the promise of spring is on the horizon, and we're already seeing the signs all around us. As hard as this winter has been, cabin fever becomes the dominant malady, and it's reasonable to ask if, in fact, you need to be in a cabin in order to have this experience. Here in the county, we have plenty of log cabins, the real ones made out of logs, and I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that cabin fever isn't influenced one way or the other by the fact that you live in a cabin. So how did Brown County folks avoid cabin fever in times past? In bygone days, each individual had to come up with a plan to feed themselves and to provide their own entertainment during a long, cold winter. Months of harsh weather meant that you and your kinfolk were going to spend a lot of time together. I can easily picture a family gathered around the fire, swapping stories, or singing their favorite songs while men and women alike worked in the handcrafts that provided for their needs. This image doesn't sound like cabin fever to me. In order to live here, you had to be self-reliant, and that meant you had to make just about everything you needed. Many Brown County folks whiled away a long winter providing for themselves or making things to trade when they got the opportunity. Heating with wood, tending your animals, and toting water provided plenty of chores that must be done every day. Whether it was hours at the loom making cloth or sewing piles of panels for quilts, the activity itself not only provided sustenance, but was a way to keep busy while the snow flies. I remember hearing about one fellow who spent the fall making oak splits. Once the stockpile was sufficient, he began weaving baskets during the winter, and he didn't stop until his barn was full in early spring. Traveling to town, visiting your friends, or attending church was time-consuming by horse. Just the journey itself became part of the experience. Wrapped in warm blankets as they rode in the wagon, steam would rise from the horse as he made his way along rutted roads and climbed the snowy hills, sure-footed and steady. Friends and family who gathered would share the news and the food they brought for the occasion. Certainly, song and dance were part of these get-togethers as isolation melted away with the camaraderie. Boredom was not an issue on the homestead. I have often wondered if we're really better off than our predecessors in this regard. It's true that we have many entertainment opportunities our ancestors didn't have. We can jump in our heated conveyance and make our way to all kinds of entertainment and social gatherings. Our grocery stores offer many varieties of fresh produce, something that someone in the backwoods could only dream of a century ago. And yet, something is lost when something is gained. And these days, it seems everywhere I go, the entire room is filled with people fooling with their phones. It's a never-be-here-now phenomena. To be sure, I like my phone as much as the next 21st century person, but I have adopted the mindset that when I eat dinner with my lovely wife, I focus on her, not my phone. In times past, no one needed to be reminded to pay attention to who they were actually with. The food had no GMOs, and the kids never watched too much violence on TV. The music they listened to was their own, and they never wrote a nasty email they later regretted. The clothes they wore had more to do with durability and function than they did with fashion, and when they were worn out, they were made into something else. In other words, everything was recycled, long before anyone had even thought of that word. In today's world, the idea of extended family has more to do with Facebook than it does with growing up surrounded by your grandparents, aunts and uncles, cousins and siblings. Much of that culture has gone, but the spirit remains. Here in the county, when we drive down our roads, we wave at one another, the way country folk do. And when we gather at the grocery or the gas station, the conversation always includes inquiries about friends and families. Brown County is nothing but a spread-out small town, and for the most part, we know and care about one another. It's all about being part of a community, and maybe that's the best way to beat cabin fever. This is Dave Seastrom. See you next time. Just a second, honey. I gotta get this.
St. Paddy's Day Blues by Gunther Flum. Here it is, St. Paddy's Day, with Irish bliss a drink away. For on this day, but once a year, we get to drink a glass of beer that's colored green, because some may think that that's the kind the Irish drink. And so I asked an Irish kid if that was what the Irish did. He told me, yes, that it was true. The Irish drink a colored brew, and though it was the color green, it wasn't what I thought it'd mean. It had to do with leprechaun that you could see upon your lawn if you've got inside of you enough of that there colored brew. And so I thought I'd give a try to drink enough so I could spy a leprechaun out in my yard, because it didn't seem that hard to see if I could find them here by drinking lots of colored beer. So as I'm sitting out there drinking, all the time my wife is thinking that I found a new excuse to practice alcohol abuse, when there came to my surprise a leprechaun before my eyes, and by his side my eyes behold a pot he carried full of gold. And so I sort of got a fear I'd better drink another beer, or that pot of gold might go away I saw on this St. Paddy's Day, since any other day I knew I wouldn't drink a greenish brew, just so I could try and spy some little tiny Irish guy. For I don't want to sound obscene, but drinking beer the color green might taste the same, but don't look real by losing all its taste appeal. That leprechaun then came up and said, "My friend, you should have used your head. You're drinking beer the color green. And yes, it's true, I can be seen." But then he said, "It's all a joke. Green beer has left you drunk and broke." And then he slowly starts to fade. I saw the price that I had paid. He whispered, "Where I'm coming from, you're also really rather dumb. For if you drank a rainbow beer, I'd have left that pot of gold right here." So as that feller went away, I found on this St. Paddy's Day, at least my luck is still Irish. Yours truly, Gunther Flum.
And here's Rich Reardon. In honor of St. Patrick's Day, we have Rich Reardon in our studio, who is the producer of In Search of a Song on WFHB at 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoons. He's producing a documentary film on Eunan McIntyre, who is an Irish musician who will be playing at the Playhouse in Brown County on March 23rd at 7:30 p.m. Welcome to the studio, Rich.
Well, thanks for having me.
It's a real pleasure. I love your show.
Thank you very much.
So tell us about this.
Well, I met Eunan a few years ago, and he's been on our show, so I feel the shameless plug was okay. He had a manager, a guy named Pat McNulty, who went to Ireland and saw him over there, invited him to come to Indiana. He's been in the Hibernians St. Patrick's Day Parade, and he usually comes in March. basically around St. Patrick's and does a lot of gigs in Indiana and stuff like that. I met him. He called us up and asked if he might be a good, interesting person to have on our show, which he was. And I turned into a friendship with Yunan, and I worked on his website and did some help with his social networking and other things. Basically, we decided eventually, after 2 or 3 years of him coming here, that it'd be cool to do a documentary on his life and music that would sort of reach into the modern folk singer who he is in Ireland, as well as some of the traditional things. He sings in Gaelic. He also does, he's a regular singer-songwriter, writing in English that you would understand. So this time we decided to try to put something together rather than just have a concert that he was, just to try to get people out for. We had decided that we would work on this documentary. It started to kind of take off from there. There's a man named Kevin Charles Murray from Indianapolis who wrote a book called The First Fighting Irish, the 35th Indiana Volunteer Infantry, which is about the actual guys that fought in the Civil War. His great-great-grandfather was one of those fighting Irish and a volunteer in the Union Army and was killed at a battle called Stone River. Anyway, he turned out he has relatives in Donegal, where Yunan is from. And so that, on top of another CD that I'm helping to produce with a guy named Mark LaPointe, who has a band called Soldier's Joy, also about the first fighting Irish from Indiana. He dresses up in period dress, he puts together a talk, and he plays the music that they might have played. And he also wants to be going to reenactments and that sort of thing that they like to do at Gettysburg or wherever. So we kind of integrated him. And then last year, Jeff Foster, who's a great local musician here, I'm sure everybody knows in Brown County, he worked with Yunan on a little concert they had, which kind of got us involved in Brown County to begin with. And that worked out so well that we asked him again this year if he wouldn't mind being involved in a concert, and he agreed. Now he's added his own talents to a band called Celtica, which I'm sure you also know about here in Brown County, and they were nice enough to agree to be involved in the concert itself. So we have Yunan, based around his music and songwriting. Jeff will be coming in and adding a little bit to that. And also Celtica and Soldier's Joy will play in the concert itself. And the concert is on March 23rd this month at 7:30 at the Brown County Playhouse.
It sounds like a great time.
Yeah, I'm excited. And we're going to be filming there for the actual documentary itself. And we hope to bring people out and get them involved. Now, we have a Facebook place where you can go and find out more about it. It's facebook.com/ Yunan McIntyre Music. You spell Yunan EUNANMCINTYRE Music, and that's his fan page. We'll also be launching a Kickstarter campaign to fund the documentary, and so there'll be more information about that on his website, which is also UnanMcIntyre.com, and you'll be able to see more about that as it goes along.
Well, how far into the Kickstarter are you guys?
I'm not sure the exact date. It's right around now that it's coming out, but you'll be able to find it on facebook.com/ Yunan McIntyre Music, and or his website also, UnanMcIntyre.com. So you'll be able to find it.
Yunan escaped a life of fishing by becoming a musician. I kind of love that.
He's from a family of 14. It's pretty amazing that he decided to do something different.
Where does he stand in the lineup?
He was pretty young. There's actually a real interesting story, which I think we're going to hopefully have time to play a song on there that's called Find Our Way Back Home. I'm going to try to tell this real quick, but it's such an interesting story. When he was a kid, he and his brother, who was like 20, were hiking along the ocean on a trail, and they forgot what time it was. The tide came in and covered the trail behind them. So they were either going to have to swim for it, which was probably going to be fatal, or climb up the cliff, which they did.
And it is the North Sea, after all.
Yes, and he couldn't climb. He was 9, and his brother climbed up, and he put his feet on his hands in order to get up the cliff because he couldn't make it on his own, so his brother kind of saved his life. A couple of years ago, one of his other brothers, who was a fisherman, was killed in an accident getting back onto his boat. Yunan said that at Christmas, this was like 10 years after his brother had died, and they were talking about it at Christmas, and he said, "Do you remember that time that you saved me at the beach?" Of course, you know. And when he got to the top, he was crying. He said, "Don't tell me other brothers that I cried," you know. And so his brother said, "I never told anybody that you cried that day." And then a month later, not even 2 or 3 weeks later, he died the same way his brother.
Oh, the one that had saved him.
Of the one that had died 10 years before, almost to the day. So he wrote this song called Find Our Way Back Home about his two brothers.
Someday we'll climb that bank together while waves are roaring down below. When our grips are gone, we'll just carry on, and we'll find our way back home.
There's a lot of interesting stories in what he writes about, and his whole last album is called The Place That I Call Home. So we're sort of starting there in the documentary. We're going to travel to Ireland. We're going to see what his life is like over there, and then going to the United States. So we're starting out shooting in the United States and then hope to travel to Ireland next year. I am very excited about being at the Brown County Playhouse and doing this in Brown County, because I think it's a perfect place to culminate the whole experience.
Well, I'm sure you'll find plenty of Irish here.
Yep. If you're Irish, please come out that night. And even if you're not, it's just wonderful music. If you like Tin Whistle and the hammer dulcimer and the pump organ and all that stuff. So.
Well, thank you so much, Rich. I really appreciate your coming.
No problem. Thank you very much for having me.
The only thing that we could do was climb.
And now, back with the Whipstitch Sallies. What about Oh Mercy?
Well, the story behind Oh Mercy is a series of events which may or may not have actually transpired and may be entirely a work of fiction. That's for you to decide. But
only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
There are no names.
Even better.
As soon as you can get.
Leave them all guessing.
To decide or to pass judgment.
One, two, one, two, three, four.
Last night it was only but a sustaining. How the hell did I get myself back here again? Should have said it all.
Thank you so much for coming in, ladies. We really appreciate it. It's a cold night out there, and this has been a lot of fun.
Thanks for having us out.
Thanks for tuning in to episode 24 of the Brown County Hour, recorded in our studio at the History Center here in Nashville and broadcast from WFHB the first Sunday of every month at 9 a.m. and the following Wednesday at 6 p.m.
You can stream this or any of our shows at our website, browncountyhour.com. And while you're there, be sure to check out our new page, Woodwatch, which is devoted to all things pertaining to the situation our forest lands are facing. And be sure to visit us on Facebook.
This show was produced by Jeff Foster and Pam Rader and co-produced by Rick Fettig, Vera Grubbs, and Dave Seastrom. And we are forever grateful to Slats Klug for our theme music. We couldn't do it without you, pal. You've been listening to the Brown County Hour.
Coming to you from deep in the woods of Brown County, Indiana.
Celebrating the arts, culture, and nature that make this such a unique community.
Visit us online at browncountyhour.com.
The Brown County Hour is a production of WFHB.
Volunteer-powered, listener-supported community radio for South Central Indiana.
Take me back to my home, Brown County home.